Hey, it's Johnny Jett. Welcome back to my YouTube podcast. And today I'm interviewing Leo Laporte, who's used to interviewing me.
I know.
So we're very fortunate. Thank you for spending the time.
Good. My pleasure.
I mean, for those of you who don't know Leo, if there's anyone out there, Leo is the tech guru. He's been around for a while. He started out as a DJ in San Francisco. And now he does multiple podcasts, including The Tech Guy, which I do every Saturday at 12:30. But he's on for, is it 3 hours you're on?
It's a radio show, not a podcast, although we make a podcast out of it. And I'm on Saturday and Sunday from 11 to 2, so 6 hours every week, all over the country, about 250 stations coast to coast on the premier networks. And if you don't get it in your town, tell your radio station to get it.
Yes. And you can also watch it online at twit.tv.
Yeah, we make a podcast and we stream it. So honestly, it's okay. If
you're so you prefer people to listen to it on the radio.
I don't really, to me personally, I don't care, but
well, I guess that's where the money is.
The
right?
Radio company likes it.
Yeah.
I don't want to undermine them.
For sure.
Yeah.
So it's a great show. And it's amazing how popular it is because I have friends from high school, college that text me are like, I heard you on the radio.
Well, we're on in Los Angeles, we're on in KFI, which is the big station in Los Angeles. We're on a KGO in San Francisco, the big station in San Francisco. So we're on some pretty big stations on the West Coast, especially. So yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. I hear from people too. It's awesome. Fun. I grew up doing radio my whole, that's been my career since college and I really love doing it, but podcasting also kind of satisfies that.
I bet.
Need,
And you also have a travel bug, which is why you're on today, because you love to travel.
Yeah.
And when you travel large and you do it well and
expensively.
And you go away at least twice a year on a big trip, correct?
Well, we used to. I haven't, I hadn't been on a trip since fall of 2019.
Was this the first time since then?
Well, yeah,
you did a road trip.
Not really. My wife and I went to Hawaii in July.
Well, that's a big trip for most people.
It was wonderful. Went to Oahu for the first time. You said you really like Oahu. And I said, okay, we're going to give it a chance. And I did too. I loved it. The island's great because it has so many varied things. You've got a big city, you've got the, Waikiki, but you also have the North Shore and it's beautiful all over and it's really fun. So I'm a big Hawaii fan. The only island I haven't been to so far is the Big Island. That's next.
You've been to Lanai?
Oh, and I haven't. Well, I'm the little islands like Molokai and Lanai. No, and that's a little. That even for me is a little fancy.
Oh, but, come on, Leo. Someday. That's your next spot. Lanai is your next spot.
I'd like to. Those are very nice hotels.
I'm sure Larry will hook you up.
You got to talk to Mr. Ellison. See if he let me on his private island.
It's funny because I was just going through those photos today with my son because we were there 2-3 years ago and he does not remember a thing. I'm like, how can you not remember the goldfish?
He was like 6 months old or
something. No, he was three, two.
All right, still.
Yeah. Anyway, it hopefully it built them. But so you just got back from Mexico. So
that's our first international trip since 2019. Yeah.
And how?
And I have to say, I feel like it was a death-defying act. Maybe I'm over skittish. Lisa and I are fully vaccinated, but still it's nervous, to go to the airport, go to an airplane, go to a foreign country, and see a lot of people for the first time in a couple of years. It was a big deal, but, it was great. It was safe. We wore our masks. Actually, people are a little bit more religious about it in Mexico than they are in the States. I think it's because they know if they get sick, they're on their own. So, right. They really took it seriously, and so did we. We had a test to get back into the U.S., an antigen test, one of the fast tests, and we all, the whole group, it was about 12 of us, tested negative, so it worked out. And so maybe it wasn't such a death-defying act. I was nervous.
And no testing for Mexico to go get into Mexico.
No, it was easy to get in.
Yeah,
they didn't even ask for vaccine certificate or anything.
Right.
But
that's why it's been
US
so popular. Mexico's had their best year, I think, in terms of tourism, because this is where all the Americans went. I mean, Cancun, I think, is always the number one international destination for Americans, but now the whole country just, was flooded with Americans during COVID.
I've always loved Mexico, and I've always tried to avoid, you know, Mexico has special tourist regions where, you know, most American tourists go. And it's really not even like leaving the US. They're resorts, you know, they're isolated. And people are, I think, unreasonably scared of Mexico. They think drug cartels run the whole country and things like that. So people are very nervous about going to Mexico. But I love Mexico. I love the Mexican people. It's always fun. And so we've always, when we've gone, tried to go to real places with real people. We were lucky this time because Mike Elgin, who you probably know, he's one of, he worked for my podcast company for a while. He's a regular on our podcast. He's a well-known tech journalist, was the editor in chief of Windows Magazine for a long time and writes columns for Computer World and many other magazines now. But he's always been a digital nomad. He's one of those people you hear about, maybe you fantasize about being, that doesn't have a regular place of abode. He and his wife, Amira, go all over the world. Now she's from El Salvador, so she's fluent in Spanish, but they just love to travel. But what they do is they don't do the kind of travel I do where you go for a couple of weeks to a place. They live there. They've lived in Cuba, they've lived in Morocco, they lived in Spain and Italy and France. And they've spent over the last decade or two, many years living in Mexico, in Oaxaca, Mexico. So what they started doing a couple of years ago is something they call gastro-nomad adventures, taking their nomadic lifestyle and turning it into a business where they invite people, usually a small number of people. In this case, it was four couples. That's actually pretty big for them. Five couples, actually. They invite people to come down. We all lived in a villa that they rented, so we were all in the same house. And they arrange exclusive events, particularly centering around food and wine. And in this case, it's a week. Most of the time, it's in one place. In Morocco, they go to many places because there's all sorts of different things in Morocco to see. They start in Fez and they move around. But so this week, we flew down to Oaxaca. They had rented a beautiful villa built by a very famous Mexican singer and her husband. And it was the singer built it with a recording studio and enough rooms so the band could come and stay with her while they were recording. They were living somewhere else at the time. So we were able to. So it was wonderful. We each had our own very nice bedroom. There was five staff members there to take care of us, cook us meals and so forth. So it was kind of a nice experience. It wasn't in a resort. We were really we were 10 minutes from downtown Oaxaca. So it was really like living in Mexico, a little bit of the high life, but it was very much right there among the people, and it was so much fun. And then Amira, his wife, is not only a foodie, but she's one of those people I'm sure you've met who's a connector, who just, they go around and they meet people and they get to know people and they fall in love with people and then they share their experience. So she knows the best chefs, the best. We went out of town to a Zapoteca village and watched craftsmen weave and make candles. It was a really wonderful experience. To top it off, it was also the Day of the Dead, which is, of course, celebrated all over Latin America. But Oaxaca is kind of the Day of the Dead central in Mexico. And so I had always wanted to go down for that. So when I heard Mike and Amira were going to do a Day of the Dead experience in Oaxaca, I jumped at it. I kind of twisted Lisa's arm. She had not spent a lot of time in Mexico. In fact, she'd only been to Tijuana. So I said, it's not like Tijuana, don't worry. I'd actually been to Oaxaca, the state, before. We had taken the kids when they were little down to Puerto Escondido, which is a beach town, a great surfing spot, very famous surfing spot in Oaxaca. And loved that for Christmas one year. So I knew it was going to be great.
So did you know the other couples?
Nope, never met them. Although they knew me because whenever Mike's on any of our shows, he talks up these gastronomad adventures, gastronomad.net. I've always talked him up. And he's always said, you got to go, Leo. So a lot of the people, I would say about half the people were listeners to the podcast or tech people who had read Mike's columns, and then they brought their spouses who didn't know. So I didn't know any of them, but you know, there was a Facebook engineer, they were all technical people in some respect. It was really nice. These are, I would say, the people who do this kind of thing are serious travelers. They they're not there to get the touristic, you know, a lot of times I think people go down to Oaxaca for Day of the Dead and they treat it like Mardi Gras.
Right.
It's like they're on Bourbon Street in New Orleans and they wear costumes and they get really drunk and they party. That's not what this was. This was to be a real authentic experience. So the people who came down, it's also, it was kind of expensive. I can't remember how much it was. It was $8,000.
$5,000, I think.
$5,000? Okay.
A person, I believe.
Per person. So you've looked into it.
Well,
so it's not cheap, but that's not expensive for 7 days, all meals, lodging. That's actually a pretty good deal.
It's a great deal. And I'm not 100% on the price. The only reason why I'm mentioning it is because my cousin Artie, who went up to your studio one time and you met, he's a LA fire department, city fire department. He wanted to go. And he actually, he just showed me an email yesterday from Mike saying that he wanted to sign up for next year, but Mike said he's not going to do the Day of the Dead ever
again.
They're
doing Christmas next year. They're going to do Christmas.
But he made it seem like he's never going to do it.
We are never doing Day of the Dead again.
That's what he said.
So guilty because she took people. It's a really, it's not Halloween. It's a really serious, reverent holiday. And it's a family holiday in Mexico. So she felt terrible taking all of these chefs and people away from their families. She said, we're never doing this on Day of the Dead again.
Because he made it even more special. So I was wondering if something bad happened.
No. It was amazing. But you know what? They're going to do Christmas next year, which will be equally wonderful.
And you're going to do it?
Well, we've done Oaxaca.
So now you got to go somewhere else.
I think we'd go somewhere else. They, I'm very tempted. They do Barcelona, which is one of my favorite cities in the world. And I love the foods. Oh, man. They do a lot of stuff with wine. So they go to a lot of cavas and winemakers. So that's pretty tempting. Prosecco, Italy would be great. I love Provence. So they're very tempting. But then there's all, Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, on the radio show, he does photography expeditions to places like Svalbard. So I don't get that much time off.
Right. So, well, you need to start taking some more time off.
Well, my great dream, and it's probably a pipe dream, but someday I would really like to do a round the world cruise. That's what I would really like to do.
Take the show on the road. I mean, you got the bandwidth.
Well, I think, we do, unfortunately we do video, which was a huge mistake. So it's not just an audio podcast, which would be easy. You could do that anywhere, but we do it live and we do it on video. And that's a little harder to take with you. You have to set up a studio and stuff. So maybe in a few years, I'm thinking it's kind of my retirement trip. But for me, retirement would mean just only doing one or two podcasts a week. And I think it'd be fun to do a travel podcast. So
for sure.
We'll see.
If you need a co-host, I know.
Yeah, I know. You'd be great. But you have to stay at home. Somebody's got to work at home.
Well, once this whole thing's over and my kids get vaccinated, I'm out.
Yeah. And your kids are lucky because they're going to get to see the world. I always took my kids to travel with me. In fact, Henry was my cruise buddy. I used to do geek cruises. We would go with other geeks to all over the world on these cruises, mostly on Holland America. And I would take Henry every time. He went to China with me.
Wow.
He's been everywhere.
How old was he?
China, he was 14.
Okay.
I think the first one we went was 2008, which means he would have been about 12. And that was really fun. I was just Caribbean cruise. And that was really fun. So yeah, he's my cruise buddy. He's been about 10 cruises. Yeah. And that's a great thing to do.
Jack has been very fortunate. He's been on almost 70 flights. And that was all within like 2 years because he didn't travel the first year and he hasn't traveled in the last 2 years, really. So, and he's been to multiple countries. I mean, I was just looking at him today with him, Barbados, Bermuda, London, Ireland, multiple times. So he's been around. Canada, of course, because my wife's Canadian.
You and I think are in agreement that travel is not about vacationing. I mean, it is, or getting away, but it's really an education. It's learning about the people of the world. What an opportunity for a young person to get to travel, to understand the world, to understand the world's peoples, to understand our commonalities. That's so valuable. So he's a lucky boy. Both your kids are lucky.
Definitely. Before the pandemic, I always would preach everyone should go to at least one new country a year. because as corny as it sounds, I truly believe there would be less prejudices in the world.
Oh, totally.
And fear, because that was my big thing. I was always afraid to travel internationally. I'd watch the news. I never went out of the country until I was 21, besides the news, Canada.
As you know, makes everything look awful.
Definitely.
And so I think a lot of people, for instance, say, oh, Mexico, I'm not going to go there. It's dirty. It's poor. And mostly I think they're scared of the quote drug cartels.
Definitely.
I'm sure that stuff's there, but it is the people are the warmest people I've ever met anywhere. Their hospitality rivals that of the legendary hospitality of the Middle East, of the Arab world. They are incredible. They are the artisans, the food we had. We went to some of the best restaurants, but also some of the humblest restaurants. There's a real, in Oaxaca, love for the traditional way of making things with what they call fire kitchens. They're wood-fired kitchens, and the food is mind-boggling. And all, you know, we went and went to a guy who's kind of loves chocolate and makes chocolate. He goes up in the mountains to these little villages where they grow the chocolate, gets the chocolate, brings it, makes it into chocolate from bean to bar. We went to a coffee place, same thing, where they revere coffee and they work with the local villages and local people up in the mountains, and they bring down the beans and they roast them and they take great care of, they had a pour over, where you measure and you weigh and all that stuff, different kinds. And we did tastings. There is such a love for food, for family. It's such a great society, such a warm society, that it's sad that people think it's, you know, some horrible place, when in fact it's one of the most exciting and interesting and vibrant places in the world.
Definitely. So with this group, did you all drive around in the van, or did you take separate cars?
So Amira arranges this all ahead of time. She has one little quirk that I wasn't crazy about, Lisa hated, which is she doesn't tell you anything. It's all a surprise. And I think other people on the trip enjoyed that, but Lisa says, I want to know what to wear, whether to bring my purse. What do I need?
Right.
She and Amira would confer, but it was, we'd get up in the morning. There was somebody would come in the middle of the night. I don't know who it was. The elves would make these beautiful breakfasts for us. I discovered a little late, only about halfway through, there was a pot of normal coffee, like a Mr. Coffee, but it was a clay pot sitting on the wood fire of coffee with cinnamon and vanilla in it. And then next to it was another clay pot with Mexican chocolate in it. When I discovered that, I had that every morning. And then about 9 or 10, they'd say, okay, let's go. And we'd get in a van. She was able to arrange a van. And in most cases, one van would fit all 12 of us.
Everyone wearing masks in the van?
We're not wearing masks in the house. So sometimes we wear masks in the van. We certainly, as soon as we got out of the van, we would wear a mask. And then, depending on where we were, for instance, it's interesting. We went to, there are many indigenous peoples in Mexico. The Zapoteca are one, never conquered by the Spaniards, by the way. They made a deal with Spain when they arrived. They said, look, we'll acknowledge your sovereignty, but we're going to do our own thing, man. And the Spanish said, well, all right, fine. And so they've always been very independent in these villages. They've taken care of themselves. They work communally for electricity and water and everything. So we went to a Zapoteca village. No Zapotecas. They're all 100% vaccinated. No Zapoteca got COVID. Zero.
Wow.
Because they're very, they're insulated. And so we would take off our masks in those circumstances. So we didn't go to any group events where there were people, strangers. It was all arranged events.
I see. And everyone in the group had to be vaccinated.
And everybody in the group was vaccinated.
Gotcha.
And so we moved masks where it was appropriate, obviously. And sometimes the driver of the van wanted us to mask, things like that. But most of the time we would not. So it's pretty cool.
What type of mask did you wear on the plane, by the way?
I wore my N95.
You did.
I'm a big N95 fan. Yeah. So not the KN95, although these are made in China, but they're NIOSH certified N95. I'm going to move because our son has decided to start eating.
I heard. I saw him walk by.
You saw him go by. Say hi, Michael.
Hello.
So I'm going to move into my office.
Hey, this makes it more exciting.
a little bit. Yeah, you get to come with me.
we get to check out the pad.
I'm on the new Mac laptop, by the way, and I hear they said they have a better camera and better sound. So I'm taking a little
crystal clear.
Is it pretty good?
Yeah,
good.
It's great.
Good. Yeah, Apple has not been known for the quality of the cameras in their laptops at all. They used to put terrible cameras in them. So
is it touchscreen? Why doesn't Apple?
It's not a touchscreen. Apple doesn't believe in that. They said, you want a touchscreen? Well, you should get an iPad. Don't get a Mac. What are you, crazy?
I mean, because my wife uses a Mac. I use a PC and mine's a touchscreen. But, you know, she has an iPad, she has an iPhone, but she's like, and my kids try to touch her screen.
This is the problem. Every Mac user who has an iPad or an iPhone is going, oh, yeah. It doesn't work. Why doesn't it work? I have fingerprints all over my screen. Oh, yeah, it's a Mac. That's right. I remember now.
It's bizarre. You'd think of it the is other a strange, way around. But
it is. I'm going to give myself a little light here. This is the TV guy in me. Maybe that's too much. There we go.
There you go.
Can you see me?
Of course. Well, I can see one side of you better.
Huh?
One side's better. One's in a little bit of a shape.
You want to do that. That's called modeling. You don't want to be. See, that's what I don't like about TV studios. It's actually when we first started doing the podcast video on the podcast, I brought in a Hollywood lighting guy. He had done, among other things, Gosford Park. And he said, oh, you know, the problem with TV lighting, it's just flat. Everything's flat. In the movies, you model it so you have one side brighter. See, like that, a little bit, just a little bit. And it gives you a little more character.
I like that.
But I can be flat.
I like that.
Whatever you want.
Listen, you're the expert. So
any way you want it. So anyway, that's I moved. I'm safe. It's quiet. What else can I be talking
so
about?
So you felt safe in Mexico. You recommend it. You went local, mostly local.
I gotta say, I'm still nervous about international travel in general. We had a cruise with Silver Sea Plan in January that left Hong Kong and went to Singapore, Thailand, and Vietnam. They canceled it.
They did cancel.
Hong Kong is not letting people in right now at all. So I would not say blanket. It's, oh, get out there. It's over.
It's not.
You got to do it safely and you got to do it intelligently. I'm going to get a booster when it's time. And, you know, I think our next trip is actually not till next summer. We're going on a TWIT cruise. All the podcast listeners are going on a cruise to Alaska on Holland America. I think by then it'll be fairly safe. But even then, when they canceled our cruise in January, I didn't book another one. You know, Silver Sea says, well, we'll give you 10% off if you book another one. I thought, well, I don't want to pass that up. But I don't want to go again because this is the second cruise that's been canceled. We had one last January. It's canceled too. Right. So I said, okay, we'll go somewhere spring 2023. And it's going to be Europe. So.
But right now, Europe's the epicenter. The WHO.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
So maybe it's a moving target.
It really is. And I'm hoping... You know, the guy from the former FDA chief yesterday said that he thinks by January it's going to be moved to an endemic.
Yeah.
And
I think we're on the right track. Let's put it that way.
I think so.
Cruising is my favorite way of going. And I know, you know, real travelers go, oh, cruises, that's. But we go on smaller boats. We like Silver Sea, Seabourn, Regent. They're smaller. They're more luxurious. 600 people. We like Silver Sea because they have 7 restaurants. So there's never boring. And then because they're smaller boats, they can go into different kinds of ports, smaller ports that sometimes the one we were going to go on in Asia had several overnights, which I love the idea of. In fact, one had, I think Hanoi had, Ho Chi Minh City had 2 overnights. That was really cool. Like they spent 3 days in the city. Definitely. And I like doing that. And I always think to myself, well, this is a Whitman sampler of traveler. I know I'm not really getting the full experience, but I'm getting to see and know, and I'm making a list. And then our goal, once I retire, the problem is, you know, I can't take too many weeks off at once, but when I retire, our goal is to maybe spend not quite Mike and Amira time, but a month maybe in a place and really get to know it. I think if you spend enough time and you go to the local shops and people start to get to know you, you get a much better a sense of what life is like in that place. So
definitely,
that's our goal. For instance, this cruise in 2023, it's not next year, in 2 years, we made it a shorter cruise. It's only 12 days. And we're going to leave a week or two in Rome, because that's where we end up. We start in Lisbon.
Lisbon.
Yeah. Maybe even some time in Lisbon, too. So we're going to still make a 3 week trip, but half of it will be on land. And we won't do a tour. We'll just get a place. We'll get an Airbnb. Nowadays with Airbnb, you don't have to stay in a hotel. You can stay in in the center of the city somewhere nice. So
that's the way to go. I mean, staying in these rentals, VRBO, Airbnb, and just, but if you are going on a cruise, one of my tips, by the way, is make sure you arrive at least a day or two early, if not even more advanced, because if you miss your flight or there's weather, you're not going to catch up on the cruise.
Well, the other reason we do that is because it takes, at least for us, it takes a while to adjust the time zone.
Definitely.
So we always get there at least a day early. Usually we have two nights in the city. The other reason is, so we're going to have at least two nights in Lisbon. We want to kind of, we're in Lisbon. Let's see Lisbon.
Have you been there before?
Time before we get on the boat.
Have you been to Portugal?
No. Well, no, yes. We've been to the Algarve, Porto Mau, because the cruise went there, but that's not Portugal. I mean, it is, but it was just a beach town and we didn't really see much of it. So I don't consider having been to Portugal. I can't wait to go to Lisbon. I would like to spend a lot more time in Portugal. I want to go to Porto.
I was going to say, I recommend going in early, go to Porto and then go to Lisbon and you would love it. I mean,
yeah.
It's inexpensive. The people are so friendly. The food is really good.
Yeah.
The architecture, it's just amazing city.
Lisbon and Porto. You're like me in one respect. You don't worry so much about language.
I barely speak English, as you can tell. So, you know, people are like, how do you get by? I'm like, listen, I used to get by before Google Translate.
Right.
So
people, if you are not rude, if you don't raise your voice and start yelling, people are very understanding. And most of the people you meet are used to tourism. Definitely. And so if you're a nice person about it, I found people are great. And hand gestures go a long way.
The best part about traveling is meeting new people and seeing their way of life.
Yeah.
But I recommend, you know, dressing as local as you can. Don't walk in wearing a college sweatshirt, shorts, white socks, white sneakers, and a baseball cap, especially if it has anything political on it. Just try not to look like an American and just try and blend in. I mean, in the old days, we used to carry a newspaper of the local place.
Oh, that's smart.
You go to a young person and they almost always speak English, but everyone's usually very friendly. And listen, I've been to Japan where I was on a train once and the train split, which I had no idea. And I was going to the airport and an old lady who didn't speak a lick of English and I did not speak a lick of Japanese. She pulled me off the train. I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. She just pointed, go to the other train.
Yeah.
You know, that, otherwise this train was about to split. And she saved me from a nightmare. And I've had that multiple times in different countries.
Where I can repeat the
same
story.
So friendly.
Yep. Yep. People are nice. As long as you're nice, people are nice all over the world. And, you know, there's that, you know, that archetype of the ugly American. Don't be the loud, ugly American. Be respectful of the place and the people, and they will be respectful back.
Agreed.
That's part of traveling, is to learn, you know, to be, humble.
It is. I mean, I when I first traveled, I traveled the way I mentioned that you shouldn't. I had huge bags. You know, you don't need so much stuff. I look like a total, you know.
You'll be proud of us. And I had to talk Lisa into this. We did not check going down to Mexico.
Good for you.
But we did buy a piece of luggage to go back because we had so many.
But that's all right.
Rugs, candles, everything. So chocolate. So, and of course, Oaxaca is famous for mezcal. And so we brought back a bit of mezcal with us as well.
What is mezcal again?
So you're familiar with tequila. Tequila is kind of mezcal.
Gotcha.
It's not the only mezcal. In fact, they don't do tequila in Oaxaca. They do other mezcals. It's made from the agave, which is you've seen it, a giant spiky plant.
Don't put it on your arm.
Yeah, it's got
I've actually been to Tequila, Mexico. It's an actually name of the right. town.
So you've seen the agave plant. They chop the arms off. It takes them 8 to 15 years to grow. So, but when, once they're grown, you can get quite a few bottles of agave out of it, out of a juice out of it. So you can make mezcal out of it. So they let it grow. In fact, I think almost all the arable land around Oaxaca is dedicated to agave plants, to maguey. They chop the arms off. They dig it up. The pineapple, the root is pretty big. They chop it up. They roast it, which, and it's like sugarcane. It's very sweet. I tasted it and it's very sweet. They grind it in a, depending on where you're getting it. There's industrial mezcal, which I don't recommend. It's made like tequila. It's made in big stainless steel vats and stuff. Yeah. We were able to go to, there's traditional and there's ancestral, which is even more old fashioned mezcal. We were able to go to those places. They, you know, they attach a horse to a millstone. It goes around in circles. It pulps it up. They put it in vats in the ancestral style. They put it in clay vats where it ferments for weeks. Then they distill it twice. It always has a very distinctive smoky kind of flavor, but there are lots of other overtones, often fruity. We did enough tastings that I could start to recognize. And the best mezcal is from wild agave, which is harder to get. There's fewer of them. You go out in the forest and get it. And it's made in the ancestral fashion, very slowly. It's still pretty strong. It's about 100 proof, but and it's not. I'm not a big drinker, so I just sip it. It's really good in mixed drinks, but I think they really want you to drink it in shot glasses and taste it. And that's all. I mean, it's everywhere, constant mezcal. It was a little more mezcal than I was. And I was really prepared for, but it was, you know, it's fascinating. We live up here in Sonoma County in wine country. So I know a little bit about winemaking. You know, every culture has some sort of fermented beverage. There's another beverage that they drink. It's kind of more of a working class beverage. I loved it, called pulque. And that's just the lightly fermented agave. So it's more like a hard cider, you know, or a beer. It's actually maybe a little bit more like a beer. It's 4 or 5% alcohol. And it's fruity and flavorful. They usually have different flavors. We went to a pulque bar, and now that I liked, and we danced for hours. It was so much fun.
That's awesome. I have been pulque to a plant where they did it the wrong way, as you said, like the big steel vats. I think I've been to Jose Cuervo, possibly.
Mezcal has a bad name in the United States because there was a company that made it industrially. They put a worm in it. Right? Maybe you remember that. People like associate the mezcal with the worm. That is not, I mean, they can do that, but that's not necessarily part of the tradition. What is part of the tradition is worm salt.
Really?
Which is and you have a margarita, they dip it in salt. So it's a salt they use, you know, with the lime, and they use it in various ways for less for cooking, more for drinking. And it's, I guess it's got worm ground up in it and other stuff. It's actually pretty good. I like worm salt.
Wow. Well, I can say.
We also ate grasshoppers. In fact, we caught them before we ate them. So we went out to Alejandro Ruiz. Chef Alex is the most famous chef in Oaxaca. He's the guy who's actually spread the word about the Oaxaca cuisine. So we went shopping with him to the big open air market and shopped for hours, bags and bags of food, brought it back. He has built a kitchen out where he grew up, out in the countryside, Portozuelo. So we went out there and had a cooking class. We cooked for hours. We made two kinds of moles, one mole, 31 ingredients. We made everything. At one point, we're busy making the tamales and stuff. And he says, okay, time to go get grasshoppers. And we go out into the herb garden, because it turns out the grasshoppers taste like whatever herbs they've been eating. So we go out in the herb garden, and they're just sitting there. They hop, of course, and you have to get them. And we got a bunch of grasshoppers, brought them back. They roast them. They're crispy. They're flavorful. And one of the common ways you'll see it is on guacamole. You'll have the nice guacamole with grasshoppers on top of it. They don't grind them up. They don't hide their origin. It's clearly roasted grasshoppers. But wow. You know what? They tasted pretty good.
I think I've had it once before, and I definitely have had crickets because that's a delicacy.
They do crickets as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
But grasshoppers are a big part of Oaxacan cuisine.
Definitely. I think Selma Hayek, I think, made it even more famous. What?
Maybe.
Yeah.
When you go to the markets, you know, where they, along with all the chilies and the other things, they have baskets and baskets of grasshoppers. So you don't have to catch them.
How about crickets?
Yeah, I think I saw some crickets.
Okay.
I did not eat any crickets. Just grasshoppers.
Well, since we're running out of time, I just want to ask you about your trip back to the U.S., what it was like. I know you said you had an antigen test. You don't need a PCR. But
yeah, although they still go up in your brain.
And where did you get it done?
I'd never been tested before. That was my first test.
Wow.
Yeah, it made my eyes water. But we got the good result, the negative result.
Where'd you have the test done?
Mira arranged it. So they came to our villa and tested all of us. She said it's normally 1,000 pesos, which is about $50. She was able to negotiate it down to 600 pesos, about $30, and which is a very good deal. And it was fairly quick. We got the results a couple hours later, you get a letter from the lab, and it has the lab on it, and the doctor's name and all that stuff, and it says negativo.
Via email.
We brought that with us. We were on Aeromexico, but I think the process is probably similar for any airline. You had told me this, the U.S. Customs have put the burden on the airlines to check people before they come back in the United States. So when we get to the airport, there's an online questionnaire you fill out and you get a QR code, you know, asking the traditional questions. You have a fever, you've been around anybody who's been positive, if you tested positive, et cetera, et cetera. So you do that. And then they ask questions. But the real quiz comes at the gate, and there are people walking around in safety vests, and they come and they interview you, and they tell you several times, although I noted a lot of people didn't catch on and ended up having to be interviewed as they were trying to get on the plane. They interview you, you show them your test, you show them the QR code, and then they put a purple sticker on the back of your passport. And then somebody else came around, and I can't, some other health questionnaire, then she initialed the boarding pass. So at that point, you're in the gate, you've got the purple sticker and the initials, and you just go through. And the rest of it was very easy. When we arrived in the United States, it was late at night. It was about 11 p.m. At San Francisco.
But you went through Houston.
And there was no one else. You know, we got off the plane, and, you know, as everybody knows, you hightail it to the customs check, the immigration check. They said, no, you know, they have those machines and they have the app. They said, don't use the machines. Don't use the machines. Just come right up to the officer. So anybody who went to the machines, they said, no, don't use those. I don't know if they were non-functional. I've actually come into the country a few years ago when they were non-functional. I don't know if that was the issue or what. People with global entry, of course, go over to the global entry side. Those machines work. They take your picture. They give you, you answer some questions, give a receipt. You show the officer, he says, pull down your mask. He checks, you know, and says, okay, you're in. So it's much faster for those people, the global entry people. But it was actually very quick for us. We were at the front of the line. We got there pretty quickly. And the guy was great. He was nice. And I said, oh, by the way, I've been pre-qualified for global entry. I want to do my interview. And he said, oh, great. Okay. After we were approved to go in. He said, you're good. And it wasn't, by the way, you know, I'm used to that. I don't know if they've stopped doing it or what. You used to get on the airplane, you get a form where you declare what you bought and how much it was worth. And are you bringing $10,000 in the country or whatever? Didn't get that. All he said is, did you buy some stuff? He said, yeah, we bought a rug and some candles and stuff. He said, was it worth more than $1,600? We said, no. He said, oh, good. That's it. No piece of paper, nothing. Nothing to show the people as you're going out. Nothing. Correct. I don't know. It was late at night. If they don't care, I don't know what was going on. I don't know if this is the new policy. I don't know. It wasn't
It's always been like, I think it's $800 per person, which is $1,600.
Yeah, $1,600.
And it's digitized now.
Yeah, but they didn't. There was nothing. There was no, anyway. So then he said, I say, I want to go do my global entry. He walks me over. He says, oh, good. Well, come with me. He actually walked me over. It was the guy who's doing the interview. Same guy. It's the same booths that they're doing the check-ins. It's just that there's one guy who's the designated interviewer. And he said, okay, put your name on this list. and go sit down.
And what number?
And it's going to be 45 minutes because it turns out they're checking everybody in from that flight. So they want to wait till they get everybody in from the flight. That's when they're going to give you the interview. We had checked ahead of time the hours and it said, yeah, they keep doing that till 1 a.m. So we knew we would be able to get that. So they go and they look at the list, come up here. He asks me, you know, some basic questions. They fingerprint you. They have an electronic digital fingerprint technology. They fingerprint all 10. He says, have you ever been arrested? Have you ever had any immigration problems? You know, anything like that? Be honest, because after he asked you those questions, they look you up in the database. They've got your fingerprints and they see if you've ever been arrested or there's any, you know, any priors or anything. So be honest would be my advice, because they're going to find out one way or the other. Fortunately, I was lucky and never got arrested for any of the bad things I've done. So it went through pretty easy. He asked me, I have traveled quite, he says, you travel quite a bit. I said, yeah. They had in the application asked every country you've been to in the last 5 years. That was hard. I had to go through my passport and look at all my past trips. But he didn't ask me that. He just said, well, it looks like your last trip was in 2019. And I said, yeah. He said, where'd you go? And I said, well, we started in Athens. We went to the Middle East, went to Israel. We went, and this probably was a little bit of a red flag, went to Jordan, went to Oman, went to Egypt, ended up in Dubai. And so he, you know, that maybe was a little, he didn't seem upset about it, but it maybe was a little red flag, but he's looking you over. You know, so I kind of told him, you know, some stories, so like I was a tourist, it was a cruise, you know, we saw the pyramids, you know, that kind of thing. We went to Petra. And that didn't, so that was okay. He knew it already, obviously, because they have records of all of that stuff. So I think some of it is just to see if you're telling the same story that they already know.
Right.
And it took a while. It took maybe 15, 20 minutes. It went on for a while. And he's not moving fast. He's waiting to see, I felt like he was waiting to see if you were antsy at all. Like, are you shifty? You're going, you know, well, yeah, I'm American. But I just, you know, I was honest and straightforward. And he said, great. They write down your known, you now have a known traveler number. I always wondered what that was. When you buy an airplane ticket, there's a field for your known traveler number. Well, that's what that is. So he wrote it down. He said, you're going to get a card. It'll have that number on it. You don't need to bring the card with you. You're going to also get, it's on the website, on the CPB website, if you go. Whenever you buy a ticket now, an international ticket, you fill in that known traveler number. That gives you TSA pre, so you don't have to take off your shoes. Although I noticed we didn't have to take our laptops out in some of the scans. So they keep changing things around. And then I guess, well, you know, you've talked about global traveler. Global entry. So, that's going to be nice. From now on, I don't have
definitely
to.
So my tip is to go into any of your airlines that you fly, go into your account and update that known ID, because you don't have to do it each time you book a ticket. It'll automatically.
Right. They'll know.
Yes.
And I'm going to email my travel agent, Jane.
Definitely.
And say, hey, Jane, I got a KTN. Here it is.
And I assume they told you that you can't bring food in and stuff like that when you're using global entry they did. You have to declare everything, but.
Yeah. But you couldn't bring food anyway. You mean, can I not bring food that I could have brought before?
You know, I haven't done an interview in a long time. I got it over 10 years ago, so it's even difficult for me to remember it. And then my renewal was just online. But the guy is like, listen, you can't, I don't think you can bring food or drink unless you declare it. So,
okay.
So what my point is, don't ever try in a, to scam them if they ask you, you tell them what you have, because
honesty,
they will
the
take that card
policy
away.
Yeah. Well, but, and that was that's my policy in general, is be honest. Yeah. And I told Lisa, as we were buying souvenirs and stuff, keep those receipts. Turned out we didn't need them, but keep those receipts in case they ask. I'm always honest about that.
Someone put an apple, I think they were flying Delta, and Delta handed out fruit before the flight landed. And someone put an apple in their bag, and boom, they took their card away.
They took the card away.
Yes, they'll just take it right away.
Extra good.
Yes, that's my point.
That's a good tip. Thank you, Johnny.
You're welcome. So make sure
I shall be extra good.
This one time you do not eat fruit is when you're landing.
I have had fruit taken away from me before. Yeah.
Well, they'll take the cart away, and that's
what
that hurts when you travel.
They can have my apple.
Yeah. Anyway, Leo, thank you so much for the time for your time today. I really appreciate it. I know.
Well, I owe you big. You're very generous with your time. Every week on the radio show, Johnny comes and talks about, you know, traveling better, traveling like a rock star with technology. So, frankly, I think I owe you about 100 of these.
Well, I'll take you up. I'll call you up in 2 months.
I always like doing it. It's always a pleasure, Johnny.
All right, Leo. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Do I get a theme song like you do? I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere.
I have to think of
it. I've been nowhere lately. Staying right here. Thanks, Johnny.
Thank you.